Hello, everyone. Welcome to Laser Focus. This is the deep dive pop culture podcast from Nerdist. My name is Kyle Anderson. Thank you for listening. I hope you all enjoyed our episode last week with Dr. Emily Zarka. Thank you again, Dr. Zarka, for being on the show to talk about giant monsters and their history and everything like that. And it really got me thinking about how much I truly love those kind of movies and that kind of storytelling and how it actually does interesting things to my brain in different ways and stuff like that. So this episode, anybody who has been a listener for a while knows that during the Halloween month, that being October, I released supplementary episodes where I just kind of talk about my favorites of blah, 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 blah. So this week's episode is going to be just me talking about my favorite giant monster movies and why I like them so much. And kind of, if you haven't seen them, giving recommendations. I would imagine most people watching this will have seen these because there aren't a ton of like under the radar giant monster movies necessarily. But yeah, so we're just going to go through those. There's no guests this week, but hopefully that's not a turnoff. So anyway, we obviously want to start with Godzilla, the king of the monsters, after all. And I was going through the list of Godzilla movies. There's so many Godzilla movies. And I think, for some context, anybody who doesn't know this about me already, I'm not sure if I've mentioned it on the show. I probably have a million times. I'm a huge fan of like miniature model work from, you know, the golden age of, I guess, Japanese tokusatsu is technically what it's called. It just means special effects photography. But I love model work. I like Jerry Anderson, you know, like Thunderbirds type stuff. I just find that stuff really interesting. And like any old sci-fi movie that has, you know, models is going to be more exciting to me than the bulk, I will say, of CG-related things. Practical is always better to me. There's one exception, actually a couple exceptions, but generally, I would much rather watch a movie that has practical effects than CGI effects. So there's a lot about those old Godzilla movies that I find incredibly charming for that reason. There's like a warmth to those, to that kind of special effects, you know, suitmation, they used to call it. But that is not necessarily the case. I mean, I would never say that the first Godzilla movie, Gojira from 1954, was a warm and cuddly movie, mostly because it's so kind of... It's actually surprising. If anybody hasn't watched the 1954 movie, I would highly recommend it. Not least because it's, you know, it's always nice to see where things come from. But like, it's such a serious movie. It takes the idea of a monster and just kind of puts it into what is effectively just a war, you know, a post-war kind of story, which, you know, we talked about a little bit last week, but like Japan was really suffering, you know, after the war, thanks in no small part to, you know, two atomic bombs being dropped on the country, but also the terms of surrender were so egregious and everything like that. So this was only about, what, 9 years after the war ended, and you kind of see the... And that comes up later in Godzilla Minus One, which I'll mention later. But anyway, so the whole thing is kind of about shame and about, you know, people having to survive and just like the devastation of nuclear energy as represented in that movie by Godzilla. And, you know, a lot of times they use very crude, like, you know, literally a hand puppet that will like come over the ridge. It's just, you know, it's a black and white photography, which hides a lot of it. You don't really get much suit acting in that until the one particular huge, very, very effective nighttime raid, about maybe halfway, two thirds of the way through the movie. It's a really wonderful movie. It's a really, you know, it has a lot to say about, you know, politics and Japan as a society and everything like that, which I think is part and parcel to those Godzilla movies. Ultimately, they would kind of go away from that after that. But that was the beginning. And so once you go to color, however, they become a lot more kind of just fun and silly. And, you know, not to say anything about like the advent of television, really in Japan, like stopped people from going to the movies. They were like, why would I need to go to the movies when I have stuff at home that I could watch? You know, Ultra Q and Ultraman and Ultra 7 and all those things in the later, or I guess that's about mid 60s. were like, let's do movie budget stuff on TV. They were putting tons and tons of money, lots of budget, is what I was about to say, into television shows in Japan at the time. And so in order to get people to actually come out to the movies, they had to make them bigger and make them splashier, make them, you know, more or really low budget. Those were the kind of the offshoots of what the film industry eventually became in Japan, because again, TV, thanks to the Olympics in 64, like just became this huge juggernaut that you couldn't contend with, because people were like, well, again, why would I need to leave my house? I can watch anything on TV right now. I don't need to go to the movie theater. And they have, that's why, you know, Japanese television, especially at the time, was really good. In a lot, they would put prestige, you know, they had samurai dramas, like all the things that you maybe equate with what Japanese kind of popular cinema was like at the time. They were doing all that same stuff on TV. So, but when you get to the advent of, you know, of color, of these movies being in color, I think that's when the, you know, the sets got really huge, the miniatures became even more detailed and things like that. And I'll talk about some more ones that don't have anything to do with Godzilla, which I think are a lot of fun. But my other favorite from that era, the Showa era of Godzilla movies, you got Mothra versus Godzilla, where Godzilla is a out and out bad guy. Then you have Ghidorah, the three-headed monster. I say Ghidorah. I'm pretty sure that's how you say it in Japanese. I don't know. Ghidorah. Anyway, Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, from 1964, which is where Mothra, the larval form of Mothra, has to convince Godzilla and Rodan to stop their petty squabbling and team up with her to fight this, you know, Martian, I think, or Venetian. Venusian, you know, super beast, which is King Ghidorah. And then Invasion of the Astro Monster, same thing. It's that's when Godzilla and Rodan have to go to space to fight Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, who is Astro Monster. Destroy All Monsters is also fun. It's maybe the best of that kind of middle era, where it's just like, let's have a million monsters fight each other. Then when you get to the 70s, you have, I think, maybe my favorite just kind of wild Godzilla movie of the era, which is Godzilla versus Hedorah, also known as Godzilla versus the Smog Monster, which is truly a bizarre movie, written, directed by Yoshimitsu Bano. It was the only one that he made. You know, all those other ones prior were Ishiro Honda, and a lot of them afterwards were either Honda or Jun Fukuda. And this is the only one that Bano actually made. And it's a wild, like, kind of, you know, kaleidoscopic, psychedelic take on Godzilla, where he fights this monster made of, you know, pollution and stuff like that. It was very of the time. But I really liked it. I think it's a really fun and weird movie. And, you know, I think there's room for all that kind of stuff in the Godzilla verse. Once you get to the 70s, after that, I think they largely become very, very silly. You have stuff like Godzilla versus Megalon, which was even featured on Mystery Science Theater. I do like that one just because it has Jet Jaguar, which is the kind of Toho's attempt to do Ultraman, but not as good. And it's a very strange movie, and Gigan's in it as well. But of those, the last Showa movie, Terror of Mechagodzilla, I think is my favorite. It was also the last one that Ishiro Honda directed. And he's just a better director than Jun Fukuda, much as I enjoy Jun Fukuda's work as well. Not to say anything bad about him, but I just prefer Honda's work. So, and then you get to the 80s and 90s with the Heisei era. I really like Return of Godzilla from 1984. It was released here as Godzilla 85. Godzilla 1985, and they did the exact same thing they did with Godzilla, the first one, which was the American version had Raymond Burr in a room talking. It was very silly. So the interesting thing about that movie is they went way too far with, so like, Godzilla's big, but they made the buildings like 30 times as big as Godzilla is. So it's like, how big are these buildings actually? that like people are still, you know, pea sized compared to Godzilla, and yet the buildings like just dwarf him by like by a lot. It's like, are these a mile long building? It's a very weird movie to watch. It doesn't feel like it fits, but they shot it on this big huge soundstage and stuff like that. There's some good effects in it. I really enjoy it. I think the one after that from 1989, Godzilla versus Biollante, is actually the best of those, perhaps, where Godzilla fights a creature that kind of grows throughout the movie because it is a mixture of Godzilla essence, plant essence, and the essence of a scientist's like dead daughter. And they becomes Biollante, and it's a very weird kind of heady movie, but I think the Biollante like final stage suit is really neat. It looks like a crocodile inside a flower. It's really, and it has like tentacles and stuff. I'm sure you've seen it. That one's harder to see, or at least it was for a long time harder to see, but I really enjoy that one. You got Godzilla versus Mothra, which was from 92, which is really good. I also love the last of those Heisei movies, which is Godzilla versus Destoroyah. That's fun stuff. I don't love the Millennium era, I have to say. I don't know if that's like controversial or not. Godzilla 2000 is fine, but anything after that I don't think is very good. Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, All Monsters, All Out Attack, or whatever it's called. It's a hard title to say. I don't think that one's very good. There's a lot of it. You know, I will say there's some interesting, like, kind of thematic things in those movies, which is, like, there's kind of the idea in one of them that, like, it literally was World War II, nuclear testing or whatever that made a somehow still living dinosaur turn into Godzilla. Like, it's a weird concept, but I don't think those movies work as well. The Millennium era, fun as they are, you know, Final Wars is just ridiculous and silly. Seeing our Godzilla, you know, have a 2-second fight with the 1998 Roland Emmerich Godzilla is very, it's fun. It's fun to see. But I think it needed a rest for a while after that. So that brings me to 2016 when you have Shin Godzilla, and then just last year with Godzilla Minus One. And I think those are a really interesting 1-2 punch of Godzilla movies, because Shin is so cynical. Obviously, that was made hot on the heels of the Fukushima earthquake and then tsunami and then the meltdown of the nuclear power plant and everything like that. And just kind of like, it was Hideaki Anno and Shinji Higuchi's, like, basically just skewering of the way that the Japanese government handled that, or mishandled that whole thing. And it's, you know, Godzilla in it is disgusting and gross and terrifying and just sort of is, like, you know, a representation of all things evil that can, not evil even, just, like, uncaring of nature that can just destroy everything and kill everybody, and how bad the government is at kind of figuring it out. It has a lot to do with red tape and bureaucracy and everything like that. And it's really interesting that Shin Ultraman does a lot of that same stuff, but tries to make it a little more hopeful, since Ultraman is generally a more hopeful franchise than the Godzilla movies. And that one was also done by Shinji Higuchi. I really like Shin Ultraman. I think I have more fun watching Shin Ultraman than I do Shin Godzilla, although I do contend Shin Godzilla is, like, you know, it's a work of genius, a satirical genius. But then you have that juxtaposed with Godzilla Minus One, which is all about hope. It's all about people banding together to defeat, you know, this giant unstoppable thing, and how even without resources, even without government backing, you know, all it takes is people kind of banding together. That movie rightfully won an Oscar for best visual effects. So that was the one I was kind of alluding to. I prefer practical effects unless it's something like Godzilla Minus One, which just looks so good. But I think Godzilla is such a malleable character and such a malleable idea that I think it works in a lot of ways. And you can have things like Shin Godzilla and Godzilla Minus One next to each other and have it still make sense. And obviously there's been other Godzilla stuff. I'm not, you know, cards on the table. Nerdist is owned by Legendary Pictures, Legendary Entertainment, so Lee. And we make Godzilla movies. They make Godzilla movies. So, there's different takes on Godzilla. I enjoy a lot of those movies too. But in terms of, like, my favorite and the reasons I enjoy Godzilla, those 13 that I just mentioned are the ones that I really enjoy. When it comes to other Toho monster movies, because they kept making other stuff, Godzilla just became, you know, the most popular. You know, they did King Kong versus Godzilla. But then they also had a King Kong spinoff called King Kong Returns or something like that. I forget what it was called. I don't really care for that movie that much. But then they also did like Frankenstein Conquers the World about a Frankenstein's monster who becomes giant and then fights a kaiju. And then the sequel, I guess, to that is about two kind of offshoot creatures that grew out of Frankenstein, which if you watch the American cut, it has nothing to do with Frankenstein, but it's called War of the Gargantuas, which is really good about these kind of one good kaiju brother and one bad kaiju brother and how they fight, kind of like wrestle with each other in Tokyo and stuff. It's cool. It's a great movie. Also a huge fan of just the movie Mothra from 1961. That's another Ishiro Honda movie. Actually, all of these ones are that I'm mentioning. I just think he's a very good director. The first Mothra movie was such a revelation to me because obviously there's the bits where Mothra destroys a town, but it's the way that the effects are done. It doesn't look, it looks silly. Obviously it's a puppet, but you buy it because everything about it just completely works. And it's just, Mothra is such a strange story about the tiny fairy twins that sing the Mothra theme song. I think it's such a wonderful movie. And that might be other than just, the original Godzilla, which it's untouchable in terms of like everything that it's doing. I think the first Mothra movie might actually be my favorite of the Toho monster movies. But then, the first Rodan movie, which actually predates Mothra, is okay. There's a lot. It's not a very long movie. I think it might be like 70 minutes, 75 minutes, very short. And there's almost no Rodan until the last 15 minutes. There's other little creatures and stuff like that, but the big, crescendo of it is Rodan hatching and then wreaking havoc and stuff like that. It's fine. It's not my favorite. I like Rodan as a monster, but I don't think that movie's very good. So some of the other ones that don't have any of the recognizable names in it, and you can watch or could watch a lot of these on the Criterion channel. I'm not sure if they're still there, but one of them is called Matango, which is, I don't even know if you'd call that a giant monster movie, but it was a really cool, like, it's people like lost in the Amazon or lost somewhere and they're on a ship and there's like a creature that can infect them and stuff like that. It's a cool movie. There's also this movie, The Mysterians, which came out not long after Rodan, I think, late 50s, which is basically about these aliens that come down to Earth and they set loose what kind of looks like a proto version of Mechagodzilla. It's an interesting kind of like robot monster that attacks. And it's very colorful. It's very, all the aliens they kind of look like Daleks, but like humans, humanoid Daleks, like in terms of their color schemes and stuff like that. It's I enjoy it. But then they made a sequel-ish to that called Battle in Outer Space, which I have seen that a lot of people don't think is very good, but I think the effects are great. Like, again, it's a late 50s sci-fi movie. It's not going to be like the most edgy thing in the whole wide world. But I just love that kind of era of special effects that Toho was doing. And then another one, which it doesn't really have a giant monster. It has a giant invisible monster, called the H-Man or the Hydrogen Man. It's great. I would recommend any of those movies. Anyway, that's just an excuse to talk about Ishiro Honda. I do want to talk about Ultraman and my love for that at another time. That'll be a separate episode, maybe with a guest, but we'll see. So other monster movies that I think are wonderful and worth a watch. So Gamera was Daiei Studios' kind of attempt to capture some of that Godzilla magic, or one of their attempts. And what's interesting about those is that they started way late, like a full decade after the first Godzilla movie is when they made Gamera. I think it was just called Gamera. Yeah. Initially it was just called Gamera, which is about, a giant turtle creature. And, the first movie basically just follows the kaiju path, essentially, where there's a monster, it awakens, it attacks, blah, 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 blah. The interesting thing about the Gamera series is that they very quickly, because by then movies like that were just straight up for kids, they would always have kids in them as main characters. And Eventually, not even eventually, like maybe by the second movie, Gamera became friend of children everywhere. But as you can maybe know by, I think now at this point, all or most of the the original run of Gamera movies have been on Mystery Science Theater, that they're not the best. They were not of the same quality in terms of filmmaking or special effects as the Toho ones. That said, there's a lot of charm to them, and Gamera is a very compelling creature with a very strange kind of shrill, you know, squawk, which is very clearly someone doing a noise. It's not like Godzilla, which is like a mixture of found noises from creatures and things like that. Like, there's clearly just someone squawking, and that's the Gamera noise. But and those movies got worse and worse and worse as they went along. But by the time you get to the 90s, in order, I don't know when this was dreamt up. The idea was to make a serious Gamera movie. And in 95, they made Gamera Guardian of the Universe, which is straight up great. I think is a legitimately great movie. And then that spawned the other Gamera, like a trilogy. So there's a trilogy of Gamera movies, followed by Gamera 2 from 96, Gamera 2 Attack of Legion, and then Gamera 3 Revenge of Iris in 1999. All three of those movies are excellent. They might get better as they go. They might be the exact opposite of, and they're really dark. They're really violent. They have a lot of, you know, blood actually in them. The creature effects are kind of gross and gruesome and stuff, while still retaining the original kind of out there ideas of the original movies. That said, the original Gamera movies, despite being for children, had a lot of blood and violence. There was a lot of dismemberment and like blood splattering, and Gamera would get like cut horribly, or like I think in one of them, Gauss, the vampire bat creature thing, which does not look like a vampire or a bat, shoots a laser out of its mouth, like, and just keeps cutting this exact same gash in Gamera's arm. And it's just like, dude, move a little bit. Someone doesn't get it. But those Gamera movies, the 90s ones, I cannot say enough good things about. They are so cool. And like scary in a lot of ways. Gamera 2, I think, might be my favorite of the bunch. Has a really scary sequence with people running through a tunnel, which weirdly enough was later used with like smaller creatures, chasing them and everything like that, which was later used in another kaiju movie made in America, which I'll talk about in a few. And then in 2006, there was another Gamera movie, the last Gamera movie, live action to date, which is just called Gamera the Brave, which kind of, it uses good, up to the moment special effects, but it was much more for kids. It was not a continuation of the trilogy, but it's still fun. It's, you know, it's definitely better again than all the 60s and 70s Gamera movies. God, I wish those movies were good. They just truly are not. And if you ever have the bad fortune of thinking you need to watch Gamera Super Monster from 1980, you don't. It's mostly just a clip movie that shows all the other Gamera movies. The framing story, it looks like it was shot on a videotape. Like, it's so bad. It's about like scantily clad women from outer space who come down and talk to a kid about Gamera. It's so weird. It's not good. Not for the faint of heart. if that kind of thing, if bad movies make you faint of heart, then that's the big thing there. I would just avoid those movies. So the other interesting thing that Daiei made was right around the time that Gamera came out, the first Gamera came out in 65, and then the next Gamera movie, Gamera versus Barugan, came out in 66. Also in 1966, they released a trilogy. All three of these movies came out in the same year of movies called about Daimajin. So you have Daimajin, I'm not entirely sure. They're period set samurai movies that are about, you know, oppressed peasants and everything like that. And eventually they call upon their guardian statue, which is this huge, literally stone-faced kind of warrior statue called Daimajin, who then comes to life and wreaks havoc on the oppressors. And they made three of these movies back to back, with completely different, I think different time periods even, or certainly different. I think one of them takes place in a vastly different time period, still in ancient Japan, but different directors, different everything, different stars. The only consistent thing is the character, the suit, Daimajin. I actually think it was played by the same person each time. But those are really interesting movies because they take that. Those are very serious movies in the way that the Gamera movies are not, and like good, like legitimately. And the third one is whatever. But the first two I think are, yeah, there's some weird discrepancy. The first one is obviously just called Daimajin. The other two are called Daimajin Strikes Again and Daimajin, The Return of Daimajin. You don't need to have seen them in any particular order because, again, they don't follow on from each other. But they were mislabeled, I think, in America or something like that. So it's always a trick whether Strikes Again or Return of is the second or third one. Like, you get those two mixed up. But anyway, just watch them. I think they're really fun. And they're kind of they're just a strange kind of time capsule of what Daiei Studios were trying to do to battle Toho and didn't win, but I think they gave it their all. So then I want to talk about some just general giant monster movies that are not necessarily kaiju movies. We can argue about that, like what actually constitutes a kaiju. Does it need to be from Japan? Does it need to be Japanese in nature? Does it need to be just of that kind of ilk? But we can kind of get into that a little bit. There were definitely a lot of, not a ton, but more than you would think, South Korean movies that came out around that same time as all the Godzilla movies in the 60s and 70s. One of which is Yongari, which you maybe saw on one of the Netflix era Mystery Science Theater movies. I think it's pretty good. There was also Reptilicus, which they also did on Mystery Science Theater, which is the Danish one, which is legitimately not good, but that I find really interesting. But a lot of these ones that came after were not necessarily based on Godzilla or the excitement around Godzilla. One that was from Hong Kong, made in the late 70s, called The Mighty Peking Man, which is just, it's literally just a ripoff of King Kong. In 1976, the De Laurentiis company made a big budget remake of King Kong with a guy in a suit. That movie is not good. It's a lot of, we talked about it a little bit last week with Dr. Zarka, but the politics of that movie are not particularly good. But it was very popular. And so Shaw Brothers made The Mighty Peking Man, and it's so strange because it doesn't necessarily look like a gorilla the way that King Kong does. It just looks like kind of like a caveman style ape. Like, it's a very weird movie. Not good. I will say, you know, it's not a good movie, but it's an interesting movie. I also like, do we consider stuff like, for example, the Beast of 20,000 Fathoms, but any of those like Ray Harryhausen stop motion movies, like, does it have to be a guy in a suit for it to be a kaiju movie? Or can it be these, you know, Beast of 20,000 Fathoms is this huge sea monster that comes out? Or like, I'm not counting dinosaur movies because, like, I think that's a different ilk of movie. And, you know, Ray Harryhausen did a bunch of those, like Valley of Guanji or 20 Million BC. What was that movie? It's a Hammer movie. You know, the one with Raquel Welch in the fur bikini. What is that movie called? 20,000 BC. I think 20,000 years BC, something like that. Drastically incorrect, anachronistic, because 20,000 years BC was way after dinosaurs existed and way before bikinis existed. But I, you know, like, does that count? Is them, like the giant ant movie or tarantula, those 50s kind of atomic warfare spawned monster movies, like, They're like Godzilla. They're just like a giant version of a thing that really exists. But does that make it a kaiju movie? Honestly, is King Kong a kaiju? Like, and I mean, it is now, obviously. But when it first came out, is that a kaiju movie? Or is that just a movie about a big ape? You know what I mean? These are the unimportant questions that I ask myself on a daily basis. One that I think is a really great movie, and it kind of doesn't have the same kind of monster legacy, but does have a lot of the hallmarks of the original Godzilla, in that it's about bureaucracy and kind of the foibles of science and also imperialism and all that interesting stuff is Bong Joon-ho's The Host, or The Host, from 2001, which was the first Bong Joon-ho movie I think a lot of us saw. Certainly I was in late high school when that came out, and I don't think I saw it until college, when I would just go everywhere to or go every week to the Blockbuster. Kids, ask your parents what a Blockbuster is, and just rent stuff ad nauseum. But the Host was one of those that I rented, and I watched it again fairly recently, and it still really holds up in terms of, you know, it's social commentary. It too is a bit of a satire on, you know, just how much outsiders don't care about pollution and everything like that, because it's literally a group of American scientists who are working in Seoul just dump stuff, you know, the I guess the leftovers of their experiments into the bay, and then grows this huge giant fish monster creature amphibious thing. It's a great movie. It's like a lot of Bong Joon-ho movies. It's very sad, and you don't expect kind of the tragic elements because it's kind of also silly at the same time. But that opening attack is really good, and it's one of the few, like, I think it's a very good use of a CGM monster, which is, you see enough of the world around it. It doesn't feel like it's just a CGI shot. It's composited really well. Great movie. If you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend that. Another one. These ones are kind of, I'm going to get into some silly ones here for a minute. I was thinking about this. It was from the late 70s or early 80s. I could look it up. It's called Q the Winged Serpent, which is a Larry Cohen movie. If you don't know Larry Cohen, he made just nothing but kind of garbagey B movies. 82 is when it came out. But it is literally about, what if the Aztec god Quetzalcoatl, depicted as a giant winged lizard or snake, it has legs, but it's very snake-like, just lived in the Empire State Building and nobody noticed, or the Chrysler Building, one of those two. It's the Chrysler Building. What if it just lived up there and nobody cared until it came and ate people? I think it's a really interesting and strange movie, but like all Larry Cohen movies, it's got a very strange outlook. The characters in it are really weird. There is a character played by Michael Moriarty who figures this out. Michael Moriarty, you may know from the early Law and Order days. But anyway, you'd know him if you saw him. But he was in a lot of these Larry Cohen movies. And he always played kind of a huckster, or, you know, just somebody trying to make a buck. And he figures out that there's a monster killing people. And he wants to sell the information to the city of New York, who will not give him any money. And he's really annoyed about it. And the cops that he goes, you know, that kind of give him stick throughout the movie are played by Richard Roundtree, Shaft, and David Carradine, Bill from Kill Bill, or Kane from Kung Fu. So weird. Such a weird movie. And it has one of my favorite line readings ever. There's nothing to do. I mean, Q, the winged serpent itself, is in the movie for like, you know, less than 10 minutes, I think, throughout the entire film. But at one point, there's yet another argument between David Carradine and Michael Moriarty, and he says, David Carradine says, like, shove it up your ass, essentially. And then Michael Moriarty said, clearly this was not scripted. This must have been an ad lib that they just decided, well, we don't need to keep it, or we don't need to change it. David Carradine goes, well, shove it up your ass. And then Michael Moriarty says, yeah, well, stick it in your brain, your tiny little brain. What? What does that mean? I mean, saying someone has a tiny little brain is one thing, but like, no one says stick it in your brain. That's such a ridiculous way to say that. I also do want to point out that Q was shot entirely on location in New York City without permits. So anytime they're out on the street, just know that they are minutes away from the cops shutting them down. It's surprising like how good that movie looks considering all that stuff. So anyway, that's a weird one. A fun one to kind of, you know, laugh about. Not amazing, but fun. Another one of those from the late 70s, or no, early 70s, is a movie. I don't even think it's good. It's not good. It's called Night of the Lepus. And if you've never heard of it or seen it, what would scare you in the desert late at night if a giant horde of creatures came over the horizon? Would it be the most terrifying thing if they were rabbits? Yeah, it's giant mutated bunny rabbits. That's what Night of the Lepus is about. It's I want to say initially, it reads initially like somebody wanted to make either a documentary or a docudrama about how rabbit overpopulation was a huge problem in the United States. Maybe, I mean, it maybe started in Australia, but in the United States as well. And about how ranchers are trying to get a handle on the rabbits because they're just eating all the crops and just all this stuff and the grass that the cows need to graze on, like all this stuff. There was a legitimate problem with rabbits back then. And so the movie is that somebody is trying to poison the rabbits, but the scientists are trying to do experiments on them to basically make them infertile so that, because, you know, rabbits famously have quite a libido. One of these lab rabbits gets out because their daughter, wants the rabbit as a pet and sets it free, and then it runs loose, and it, instead of being infertile, it is actually able to spread the experimental, you know, stuff to other rabbits. And what it actually does is make them grow to the size of effectively like a school bus. Cause there's a scene where like a bunch of rabbits are, and they're real rabbits. That's the other thing that's nuts about this movie, is that for the most part, the wide shots are just real rabbits that they put in miniature sets, like around, you know, scale models of like school buses and stuff. And then they just shot it in slow motion to the point that it kind of looks like they're moving slowly, or, you know, like big enough to, but they didn't do it right. And they literally just look like they're in slow motion. Like, it doesn't look like a big thing moving slowly. It looks like rabbits are running in slow motion, which I find truly baffling why anyone thought that was a good idea. There's also a lot of, I don't think it would pass muster with PETA these days. Rabbits get flung around, but there's also parts in the movie where like people go into, like a house or, a cave or something like that. And anytime a rabbit actually has to attack a person, it suddenly becomes a guy in a rabbit suit with like big giant evil buck teeth. But that scale doesn't work at all, because literally these rabbits are the size of a school bus, and yet suddenly they're small enough to like grab a guy and bite him. It is baffling how bad this movie is. But in a really interesting and funny way. And if it had been called Night of the Rabbits, I don't think people would have even thought about it. But like the trailer for it, go look up the trailer. You don't need to watch the whole movie, but go look up the trailer, because it starts with a guy being like, "Welcome to a night of total terror." And all you see is just like eyes in the darkness. And it's like, ooh, what does it mean? And it's like Night of the Lepus. And then the more you see of it, the more you can see that it's rabbits. Giant killer bunny rabbits. And they're cute. And then sometimes they put like, they like drown the rabbit's food, like the real rabbit's food, in like spaghetti carbonara or something like that, so that it looks like blood when it's eating it. Oh, friends and loved ones. That is such a silly, silly movie. Okay, a few more. I want to talk about Cloverfield, the Cloverfield of it all. So when Cloverfield first came out, obviously there was, you know, anybody who doesn't remember that, there was a huge viral marketing campaign. They actually didn't have a name for the movie for a long time. Cloverfield just kind of became the movie. That was sort of like the undercover code. Anybody who doesn't live in Los Angeles, like in Culver City, there is a road called Cloverfield, which is just where Bad Robot's offices were. So it's a whole weird thing. I'm not sure why it's called Cloverfield ultimately. It has nothing to do with anything. But it was one of the first that I can remember, like, viral marketing campaigns for a big budget movie. It wasn't like The Blair Witch Project, which was a viral marketing campaign for this very, very low budget movie. It totally worked. Or even something later like Paranormal Activity, which is like, let's make this very tiny budget movie and just kind of have a viral marketing campaign about it in order to get people hyped to go see it. And it worked. But not to say that Cloverfield had like a huge budget, but it's like a big movie. It's got people in it. It's got pretty pretty impressive special effects. And so a bunch of us went to go see it when it first came out. It's obviously found footage, also like a found footage giant monster movie. And there was a lot of speculation that it was actually like a covert Godzilla movie. And then I remember a lot of people being actually disappointed and like angry that it wasn't a Godzilla movie, that the monster in the movie wasn't Godzilla. It was just this big, weird space beast or whatever it is. I, your friend Kyle Anderson, gets violently motion sick. I have to, you know, if I'm not sitting looking out the front of a car, I get ill, like all that kind of stuff. And I especially get ill with really jostly handheld movies. Doesn't even need to be a found footage movie. I remember getting nauseous watching the first Hunger Games movie because so much of that is just kind of shaky. It's just my brain just doesn't like any of that stuff. But I remember watching Cloverfield, being intrigued, but then having to like look away from the screen for huge chunks of the movie because I was getting ill. I also kind of don't like the design of the monster in that. And by that, I mean, it creeps me out too much. I don't like looking at it. You don't see a ton of it in that movie, but at the end, you know, when, goes to eat the guy holding the camera, you see its face in all its glory and everything like that. And it's like, I think it's too effective as a monster. I think it's very creepy. And I don't enjoy it. And then I also have this weird thing, which I mentioned a little bit to Dr. Z, but like not the blood waters of Dr. Z, but her name is Dr. Sarka. That anything that's too big scares me. Like not just not, I am afraid of it. Not like someone jumped around a corner, but like I have a deep visceral, like revulsion to things that are too big. I think I do have gigantophobia or whatever it's called. And so in the otherwise god-awful movie, The Cloverfield Paradox, which is the third one, and the killer of the franchise, at the very last shot, I mean, it's a stupid, stupid movie that tries to, like, make this totally unrelated movie part of the Cloverfield universe via weird cutaways and stuff. But the very, very end of it is you see above the cloud line, and then from the clouds, and, like, the mother, or you know, like an adult sized Cloverfield monster pops up and roars. And that, I hate that shot so much because it's just like, it's stupid and terrible, but like it gives me like weird phobias. Is that helpful to anyone? Does anyone else, am I alone in this? Please write to laserfocus at nerdist.com if you also are afraid of big giant things. Which is a wonder then why I enjoy the 2021 movie, or 2019, somewhere around the pandemic, movie Underwater. Cause I actually really do like it. I don't think it's like an amazing movie or anything like that, but, it's basically aliens, but underwater. Like there's this futuristic kind of, deep sea base. It gets, something happens, it starts to flood, people have to get out, and there's like this dwindling group of people who are trying to, you know, make it to the other base. There are human-sized kind of giant fish monster creatures down there, and then at the very end of the movie you see that they are merely like little satellite offshoot creatures of this enormous sea monster creature, which ends up actually being Cthulhu. Which was sort of like, they just did it. Like, it was just like, it doesn't really make a ton of sense that this is Cthulhu, but hey, why not make it Cthulhu? Public domain monster. It doesn't look quite like the depictions of it, but I think that is to get away from, you know, plausible deniability, even though the director has fully said it's Cthulhu. That size of creature is terrifying to me. It does scare me, but I really actually like that movie. I think that should count it certainly is a giant monster movie. I don't know if it counts as a kaiju movie, but I've always wanted a big Cthulhu movie monster, and that's the closest we've gotten thus far in, you know, major popular cinema. There's the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society made a silent movie version in like 1920s style of Call of Cthulhu, which is really good and has a cool like stop motion Cthulhu at the end, but That is a very low budget film, but it's definitely worth a watch if you haven't seen it. And then the last one I want to mention here is a movie that I saw during the pandemic as part of the festival circuit. And it is called What to Do with the Dead Kaiju. It's another Japanese movie. Satoshi Miki is the writer-director. And it is such a fun and fascinating idea for a movie, which is that the movie opens with a giant kaiju, which has, you know, struck fear into Japan. It has died and collapsed. And now there is just this big rotting carcass of a kaiju in the middle of the city. And then it is about all these different government entities that are trying to figure out what are they going to do with it. They can't eat it. Like there's, you know, they don't want to try to blow it up because, you know, who knows what horrible things can happen. So they eventually sell tickets for people to come and get a closer look at this giant dead creature. But then it ultimately that doesn't work because who wants to be around a big giant rotting thing after a while? And it just becomes a nuisance. And so it's just about these people who have to figure out using very little money. The government is not really big on doing this and none of the other governments of the world care at all to help. How do we get rid of this? And it's a really funny movie. I think, I think it might be a bit too long. It's almost 2 hours long, but I think ultimately it really works and it's a very funny idea and something I've always wondered about these movies. Cause it effectively works like a kaiju movie where it's a bunch of people have to band together and they each have their specialty and it's like a disaster movie, but the disaster is over and they're just trying to, dispose of it, but it's treated very heroically and everything like that. So I would highly recommend that. I didn't know this until just now, but I am in the Wikipedia for that movie. Kyle Anderson of Nerdist gave the film 3.5 out of 5 and wrote that it deftly straddles the line between satire, parody, and legitimate disaster film. Hey, that sounds a lot like what I just said. I legitimately did not know that until just the second that I was on the Wikipedia page. So good for me. Anyway, that is my kind of short but also quite long list of monster movies that I enjoy. Giant monster movies. There's other types of monsters, but I think there's a very specific kind of love in my heart for these giant monster movies. Also, I mean, not least because I am kind of scared of the idea of them. They're parts of a lot of these movies. If they are able to do the scale right, that are just terrifying to me. Because it literally shows how small we are and, in the universe and everything like that, even on our planet. So please, along with telling me if you're afraid of giant things or if you just want to make fun of me, please let me know your favorite giant monster movies. What are your favorite, Godzilla movies from throughout history? Write to me at laserfocus@nerdist.com. Let me know. And let me know if you enjoyed this format. I think, every once in a while doing something like this is fun and gives me an opportunity to just talk about stuff that I enjoy. So until next time on Laser Focus, I've been Kyle Anderson. And join me again next week when my guest will be a person. Thanks. Bye-bye. Laser Focus is a production of Nerdist Industries and Legendary Digital Networks. It was produced, edited, and hosted by me, Kyle Anderson. For more, visit Nerdist.com.